Live from the hills of Westwood, this is Long Story Short, the Daily Bruins news and culture talk show. I'm Sid Shaw.
And I'm Meral Eric.
So, Meral, how was your weekend?
My weekend was okay, not too eventful. What about you?
It was not too bad, so we won the game. That was
awesome. I know. We're, what, number nine now?
Number nine. But, you know, I couldn't go for the game. I spent the last 2 days not sleeping and studying, so that's my fun fact for the week. What about you?
Actually, my fun fact for the week is a little more fun than that. I actually matched with a guy on Tinder who was on The Bachelorette. Yeah, so now back to the show. On Long Story Short, we don't mess around. From science and health to arts and politics, local news and campus buzz to social life and dating, we're here to talk about it all. That being said, we have an entertaining show for you tonight full of useful information.
In 2006, when Professor David Delgado Shorter visited the UMA Indians of Sonora, Mexico, he attended a morning ceremony known as Lutu Paco. Tonight, he discusses how his film, Lutu Chuktiwa, Cutting the Cord, which will be presented at Kauffman Hall Thursday, explores the lifestyles of indigenous peoples.
Then, rappers Maurice Wheatley and Sam Goldberg talk about their passion for rap and how it has developed at their time here at UCLA. Hear them battle it out with some freestyle rap.
Lastly, we have Professor Danny Oppenheimer from the Anderson School of Management, whose research focuses on human decision-making, to give us a simplified breakdown of the causes and possible solutions for the recent government shutdown. Associate Professor and Vice Chair in the Department of World Arts and Cultures, Dance, David Shorter, has led a life between science and the paranormal for as long as he can remember. He grew up around folk belief and hints of high-level secret government research, which inspired his lifelong passion of researching and educating himself and the general public on otherworldly phenomena. This coming Thursday afternoon, Shorter will debut Lutu Chuktiwa, meaning Cutting the Cord, a film he has been working on for 5 years in UCLA's own Gloria Kauffman Dance Theater.
So before we get started, I was just wondering, could you tell me a little bit more about your personal background and how you developed such a strong interest in, like, otherworldly phenomena?
Sure. Growing up, I was living in rural New Mexico, and my father was working out at a sort of undisclosed area in the deserts of New Mexico. He was working full time and my mother was working full time. So the result is that they sent me to live with my great grandmother. And she definitely had a type of worldview that we might say was very full of folk beliefs or something having to do with very powerful dreams. And also often people would come to her house for help having to do with their health or for example, women who were pregnant would come to her for help. She wasn't not necessarily what we would call like a curandera or a healer, but she definitely had a lot of knowledge. And I think that that was something that was passed down from her mother, my great-great-grandmother, who I actually knew as a kid as well. And there was something about the combination of that with my father doing very high-level secret government research sort of stuff in the days, and then having me have the stories of my grandmas. Also, it led me to grow up and think, when I got to college, I really wanted to understand why different people think the way they do about the world and what counts as valid knowledge.
Definitely. So you had mentioned that your film is premiering this Thursday evening in Kauffman. Can you give me a little overview of what went into making the film, what the film is about, and what Thursday's event will be like?
Sure. Well, in 2006, I received a National Science Foundation grant to take a filmmaker with me to the field site where I'd been working for, at that point, about 19 years. I have been working with the UMA people, or they're also known as the Yaqui, in northwest Mexico since 1992. And one of the main collaborators, a guy who first said I could interview him and sort of made a lot of contacts for me in my early years, he had passed away in 2005. And his family member said, well, since he was always working with you and letting you record stuff, why don't you come and record his death ceremony, which is, there's two or three ceremonies after death. One of them is the year after someone dies. It releases the family from their sorrow and their sadness. And it's called a Lutu Paco, which is kind of like a, what you would call the cord ceremony. And the reason why they call it that is at the beginning of the ritual, early in the evening, they tie a cord around the family member's necks. And in the morning, they cut that And it not only symbolically, but it actually releases them or unties them from the sorrow that they feel for that person who had passed on. Well, I went in 2006 with that National Science Foundation grant and a filmmaker, and we filmed the 4 or 5 days of preparation, and then we also filmed the entire ceremony, which is about a 12-hour ceremony. And since 2006, I've been thinking of the ways that I could utilize that material for purposes that both serve the community and help people who are not Yaqui or UMA understand the importance of language and culture to not just this culture, but all cultures. And finally, around a year or two ago, I got to a point where I recognized how I could do that. So I made an edit of the film, and then I took that edit on tour among the various communities, and I gave community members handheld audio recorders, and I had them record their real-time reactions to what they were seeing on the film. And that's what I used as the narration. So instead of having an outsider or an anthropologist telling you what's taking place inside this community, what you have instead are cultural insiders, community members, telling you why what they're seeing in the film, as you're watching it yourself, why it's important to them, or what goes through their mind when they think about it. And so it's kind of ethnographic in the sense that it's still helping us understand something that's not of our culture. But on the other hand, it's also helping insiders because it helps start a conversation within the community about what are the importances of these traditional ways or these rituals or the languages that you hear inside the video.
Cool. And then so Thursday evening, how is that event going to go about? Like, what can we expect from that?
Sure. Well, it's actually in the day. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon up in Kauffman Theater, which is on the second floor of Kauffman Hall. We're going to have the Los Angeles film premiere of this film. I premiered it once inside Guadalupe Pueblo in Arizona, and the community really responded positively to it. So we are inviting a couple of the guests from that community out here, and Thursday, October 17th, at 3 p.m. we're going to go ahead and premiere it here in Kauffman Hall on the second floor, and then there'll be a small 5-minute, 10-minute break for people to leave who can't stay. But if people can stay, we're then going to have an hour and a half conversation with community members and me and some of the other filmmakers and editors about the politics of representation and what's it mean to put this Indian ceremony on the internet, because the film is actually part of another website that I've designed. And so anyone's welcome to that.
Awesome. And so what role did UCLA play in the creation of your film, or in general in your broader research on other than human phenomena?
UCLA's been amazing. I couldn't imagine a better campus. I think one of the first things that happened is when I was interviewing and trying to decide whether this would be a good place for me, we have a dean here in the School of Arts and Architecture by the name of Chris Waterman, and he set me up from the very beginning with a very supportive policy that what you do here, what you make here inside the School of Art and Architecture, as long as it is collaborative and it's about research and it's engaging the arts, you'll be sort of welcomed to pursue those interests. And so there's something about my job here in which I'm not being asked to simply produce a book as being the only form that knowledge takes. That makes me feel more excited to make a variety of projects. So I've done 2 digital projects since I've been here, a website, a language revitalization website that's going to be a phone app, and now this film. It frees us not only from thinking that the only thing that's knowledge comes inside a book, but also that it's important to engage other people's ways of knowing, which might be film or it might be websites. And so UCLA's been fantastic on that level.
That's awesome. And are you currently involved in any other research or projects on or off campus?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm doing this long-standing language revitalization website called Wiki for Indigenous Languages. It just won a large grant a few months ago so that we can completely transition the website into being a phone app so that people can use it both in the communities in Mexico and in the Yaqui communities in the United States. And then I've just recently been asked to curate an exhibit of masks that will be at the Fowler Museum this spring. The Fowler Museum, as you may know, is celebrating its 50 years of being one of the top museums in the world, really. And so I'll be a part of that display this coming year. And I'm finishing up a couple articles having to do with why we use terms like spirit or sacred when talking about Native Americans. And then the really sort of exciting project for me is that I'm working on my second book, hoping to finish it in the next few months, which will be about that very first question you ask about growing up inside the deserts of New Mexico with my father and my grandmother, and sort of how I've had a life that's been in between the borderlands of science and the paranormal.
Awesome. So that's pretty much all the questions I have for you. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
No, just that Daylene Bruin's great. UCLA is great. I really love my students, and hopefully people will be on the lookout for classes that they can take with me.
Cool. Thank you so much for your time.
Sure.
I'm Merle Eric.
And I'm Sid Shaw. Up next, we have Two Guys That Rap. But hang tight, y'all. We got a quick little gap.
Hey.
Welcome back to Long Story Short. I'm Sid Shaw, reporting live on UCLAradio.com for the Daily Bruin.
And I'm Maral Eric. Second-year African-American studies student Maurice Wheatley and second-year electrical engineering student Sam Goldberg bring passion to a new level when it comes to music. Goldberg and Wheatley, who also goes by his stage name Ace Mac, currently write, record, and produce music on campus on a daily basis. Both also regularly create musical content for public consumption. Though Wheatley is looking to pursue music as a career while Goldberg pursues it as a hobby, both young men give credit to UCLA as the key to their success. How long have each of you been rapping and or singing?
I've been rapping for 10 years, since I was 9.
I've been playing music and performing since I was about 8, but I just started taking singing and rapping really seriously in the past, like, 2 or 3 years.
Cool. And so are you guys looking to pursue a career in music, or is it just something that you do for fun?
Yeah, that's actually what I chose to go to college for, pursuing my own record label. I don't know, I'm just getting all the knowledge that I can in college and in an industry so I can prepare myself for once I graduate to launch my label.
If an opportunity presented itself where I could go and make that a career, I'd definitely take that opportunity, but it's not something that I'm actively pursuing at the moment.
Do you guys each make your own music? If so, how and where do you write and record?
Yeah, so I have my studio at my frat now. It started off in a dorm. I've been recording ever since I was like 16. I don't know, like I've had a lot of experience in just like putting together a song right off the top. I don't know, Sam's been recording with me lately.
Yeah, I mean, most people think that you need a ton of equipment to be recording or producing your own songs, but I mean, Ace, he's going by with his computer and he's able to produce his own beats, like professional sounding beats, and record his lyrics that he's written and make it sound professional. So just all in the room with the tools that he has. And yeah, I've been producing and recording music for maybe like 4 years now.
Oh, wow. And so the actual like music that you guys use, do you make the music? Do you find it online or how does that work?
I do everything. Like I reach out to producers online. You know, I find free music online. So I don't know, like I've kind of, I'm actually putting out a beat tape this December along with another mixtape.
Yeah, I've produced some of my own beats and I also have a lot of friends who produce. So oftentimes they'll send us tracks to listen to and, you know, they'll let us know if you want to write something and record on this, I'd like you to do that. So pretty much source the music from anywhere. It just depends on the project.
What role has UCLA played in your rapping careers?
Man. you know, I started off doing like the talent shows and, you know, eventually people started reaching out to me, like seeing how hard I was working for what I wanted. And I don't know, eventually, like I just started ending up doing shows with part of the campus. I've worked with the ASU committee, talked to Daily Bruin people, and I don't know, like I've been getting a lot of support from the campus. And I don't know, like it's been a big platform for where my career is, and that's what I came here for.
For me, if I wasn't here, I probably wouldn't be interested in rapping and hip-hop to the level that I am right now. It was really Ace who got me seriously interested in rapping and performing hip-hop music. The summer before I came down here for my freshman year, I started freestyling on my own, but I didn't really know too much rap music. And so coming down here,
crazy.
I was, yeah, no, it is. It's seriously crazy. Like coming down here, I was exposed to all this new music and like people started showing me rap music. I started listening to it more and more. And yeah, now rooming with Ace, bumping, you know, hip-hop and rap and rapping and recording every day, so.
It sounds like people have been really supportive, and that's great. Do you feel like you need to study music? I know you said you're an engineer,
yeah,
but
I'm a student of the game. Like, that's what I came to college for. Like, I'm learning everything about the industry on the side from going to school and, you know, making sure I'm maintaining a good GPA and I get my degree on time. But, you know, I'm keeping a good eye on what's going on in the industry right now. I know it's a lot of changes and what's going on, so.
So when you get out of college, do you have a plan of where you want to take it yet, or are you just
going
to?
Yeah. I want to, I mean, not specifically. You know, I kind of just let life do its work at that point once I get there. But, you know, I have a clear idea on, you know, starting my label and still putting out content. Like, I plan to put out a mixtape every other quarter, you know, with music videos, probably tour. I don't know, like, I can see myself really, like, starting a label of, like, songwriters and producers and actually start signing people and generating some revenue.
All right, so if someone came up to you guys and said, teach me how to rap, how would you instruct them? I guess I'm asking you, can you teach me how to freestyle?
I mean, you know, I feel like anybody can rap. Like, it's a natural thing, especially if you're around it enough. And it's that mentality of, like, watching what you're going to say is going to stop you from actually freestyling. Like, if you really want to freestyle, I feel like it comes natural. Like, you just kind of have to let it flow.
Do you think you have to be, like, a writer or someone who's good with, like, words?
Everybody's artistic. Everybody has an artistic side. You just got to find it.
Everybody uses language every day. So, I mean, people can manipulate words and definitely freestyle even if they aren't or don't consider themselves necessarily
musical. Yeah, it could be choppy, but you know, you could make it happen.
It's just mostly about relaxing, and it's much easier to focus on the speaking to a rhythm part of it than rhyming. And usually if you can do that and if you're able to talk to a rhythm and keep that going, the rhyming will come naturally.
So you guys think I could do it if I tried?
Yeah, most definitely.
Absolutely.
Well, I don't know about that, but I think I could, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm a little too embarrassed to do it right now, but I trust you guys. Okay, so now for the moment of truth. Now that you guys just told me all about how to freestyle rap and everything that you guys have done, could you two just show us a little bit about what a freestyle rap off or something pre-recorded sounds like?
I mean, yeah, I could play a track right now. We could just freestyle on this, gas this right now. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, yeah, so vibrant. Yep. Yep. Hey, Smack, here we go. Okay, in the cold world where everything go, either you a victim or a winner that controls. So me, I want it all, watch a humble nigga fall. God, forgive me for my sins, I'm obsessive over commas. Wasn't good at rapping, so I started rapping. My degree just a guarantee for the casters. Ain't no game like EA, and still the DEA looking for me cause I'm dope. I'm feeling like Tony Montana when I'm in a studio. Start applying pressure, watch him feel the steak and flows. I ain't worried about ice, been investing on the throne. I ain't worried truth be told. The truth is ugly, trust me, don't listen. You ain't ready for it, can't survive in that dimension. Ignorance of bliss, life a bride that I ain't feeling. The only time is death in the cold world to live in. So I'm militant, salute to a real truth. Came from where they shoot for respect and loot. Niggas playing with my fate like I won't shoot. Smooth criminal, I won't lose. My whole crew hungry, go and test me, see what they do for me. You go ride with me or despise me. Either way, I'm timeless, got eyes right behind me. I don't take haters kindly, but what's justice in the jungle? The food chain full of hyenas and sneaky rats. Snakes in my line, straight evil, quick to attack. I don't fear shit unless the sky himself. No man should ever stop me, I'm positive, y'all can't see me. I'm about to run that back for Sam right here. Let him know.
What's up?
AKA Goldie. Let him know.
True Society Click. Goldie. Check it. I done a lot thus far, but I ain't done yet. 19 is coming round, clock ticking, sweat dripping down my neck. Break heels to get mine, and still wake up in the morning feeling fine. Cause I'm on my grind, elevating me in mind. Knowledge what I seek, enemies what I find. I devise my plans regardless, pay my dues in due time. Rewarded by accomplishment, and herald the learning of all before me, which I proceed to implement. Your reality, I subject my own. Young kid, king, crown, sitting on the throne. So throw off that arrow from the girl with the pearls. These show be my favorite, so delicately flavor it. And in this mindset, I'm impervious to distractions. Mental constructions burn down round an axis. I will not allow anyone to force me to reassess. Believe me, I've realized without hope, you're hopeless.
Yeah. Hey, we killed that
fight. Oh my gosh. You guys, that was amazing. I'm going to say, like, I thought I was a good rapper, but I don't think so anymore. Wait, so you said that you haven't even been, like, rapping that long, or what? That was amazing.
I don't know what happened. Like, I just started, like, soaking everything up and he's ready. Like,
it's literally been like about a year since I started rapping at all or listening to hip hop.
I mean, but he has a good background in music, though.
Yeah, like, but I mean, it's all thing, music, like, and like everything has such a straight, like, or such a strong bass and blues and stuff. You know, I grew up on that, so I was pretty accustomed to the whole like rhythm and swing thing. So,
All right, well, that's all the questions I have for you guys. Thank you guys so much for coming out today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, is there anything you guys want to add?
Yeah, most definitely check out my last mixtape, True Society. I put it out on DatPiff. It's on my website, acemack.com. That's acemack. You can follow me on Twitter, acemack, MACK, MW.
Yeah, and I have a like 4-track release in the works right now. It's probably the first serious like real recordings of me doing more hip hop centric stuff that I'm gonna put out. So that should be coming out maybe like the next month or two.
All right, thank you guys so much.
True.
Thank you.
Thanks. I'm Maral Eric.
And I'm Sid Shaw. So last Thursday, I met up with Danny Oppenheimer, a professor at the Anderson School of Management, and discussed with him the word behind the government shutdown. As an expert in human decision-making, Professor Oppenheimer dissects the economic and political causes for the shutdown and mentions probable methods to come closer to an agreement between the opposing parties.
So I'm Danny Oppenheimer, and I am a professor with a split appointment in psychology and the Anderson School of Management.
So I'm going to get to the point here. What exactly is the government shutdown, and why did it happen?
Mm-hmm. So the government shutdown is basically the notion that certain government organizations, anything that is deemed non-critical, not emergency, are not being funded and therefore cannot be open. Basically, until the House and the Senate and the President can agree, they are not funding government agencies that are deemed non-critical. So those are things like food stamps, science funding, Center for Disease Control. So anything that national parks, anything that is deemed non-critical for day-to-day functioning of society.
So what were the events that led up to this government shutdown, and was it inevitable?
So here's what's going on. The Republicans are unhappy with Obamacare, with the Affordable Care Act. It was passed before they took control of
in
the House.
In 2010.
Right.
Yeah.
And so now they're in control, and they're unhappy with it, and they're trying to repeal it. But they can't, because the Senate is controlled by the Democrats, and the President is a Democrat,
right,
and they're not willing to repeal it. So the Republicans are in a bind, because they've promised their constituencies that they
that
will repeal
they
this,
repeal it,
but
right,
they have no power to do so. So they're trying to get negotiating leverage. And one way in which they can do that is they have some control over the budget. And so they're basically saying, look, we don't like the Obamacare Act, and we want it changed. And the Democrats say, well, we don't want to change it. It was passed. And the Republicans say, well, we want it changed, so let's come to some negotiation. And the question of whether or not the Republicans or the Democrats are being stubborn, well, I have my own views on that, but
right, ultimately,
the Republicans feel that the only way that they can make the policy change that they feel is important for this country is to use the shutdown of the government as negotiating leverage, whereas the Democrats feel that this is a law that has been passed and that the Republicans shouldn't be able to hold the country hostage, as they call it, in order to revoke legislation that the Democrats like. It's certainly a risky proposition. It's risky politically. It's risky economically. The Republicans are taking backlash from this. If you look at public opinion polls,
right,
most people are blaming the Republicans. And
I've heard they're at their lowest number, like just yesterday, a 28% approval rating,
which is at as low as 5% amongst independents, which is as low as it's ever been. That's unbelievable. And it's because people really feel like, well, you don't like this, but you don't shut down the government if you don't like it.
The Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, why are the House Republicans so against it?
Well, there are two things about it. One of them is that a lot of people believe that this is overreaching of the government into people's personal lives. So the mandate, the government mandate that requires people to hold insurance is something that rankles many Republicans. The other thing is that many Republicans don't believe that the shutdown of the government is as negative as many people believe. And they look and they say, look, we've shut down the government and society is still functioning. And in terms of the defaults that may be coming up in a few weeks,
right,
there are Republicans out there who really don't think that would be a problem, that they don't see that that would create much in the way of economic distress. And if you believe that Obamacare is a real problem and that the economic distress caused by a default is not, then it makes perfect sense from that perspective to make the choices that they're making.
How has this shutdown affected us here at UCLA?
Well, the biggest thing that I can think of off the top of my head is in research dollars. So, you know, in terms of teaching, it shouldn't make that big of a difference because it's state funded, not nationally funded. There are going to be individual students who are hurt by it because they receive government funding. But it's the case. But UCLA, the biggest issue is probably going to be that federal funding is come to a halt. And so people can't apply for grants, research grants, which is going affect the effectiveness of labs. I think that academia, UCLA, is largely insulated from this because of the nature of its funding, with the exception of science funding. And so the students here are not probably seeing the effects as largely as people who are not within a university setting. But the research funding is something that a lot of people are very concerned about. It's worth noting that the way that research labs work, it's not just that, well, we just stop for a month and right, then when the funding comes back, we start again. Many labs require continuous funding. So you can actually, if it goes long enough without federal funding, that labs dry up in terms of their money. It's not just that, oh, well, we'll start up where we left off. Mm-hmm. You might be set back years in
exactly
terms of research.
Federal funding is not the only source of funding that scientific labs get here at UCLA.
No, it's not. There's, of course, private funding, private philanthropy. The UCLA administration has some funding set aside. There is industry that you can go to. There are private philanthropies, but it would be much harder, and many labs will not be able to fund themselves.
Now, this shutdown, what does it mean for the U.S. government internationally?
Well, I mean, internationally, it certainly hurts our reputation. It makes us look like we're not capable of running our own government. It makes us look silly. It hurts our leadership in the international sphere. Economically, everybody is probably keeping a very close eye on it. If the U.S. defaults, it's going to send ripples through the international markets, and a lot of countries are going to suffer. And so I'm sure they're all watching this very carefully, and they have no idea why we can't get our act together, I'm sure.
Now, you're an expert on decision making. What,
yes,
what are the decisions that, you know, the House Republicans need to make?
That's a good question. And it's a difficult question because if the House Republicans were to cave, then their constituents would be unhappy because people in the districts that they are representing are unhappy with Obamacare. And so they have to balance two things. On one hand, if they have to go back to their districts and say, yeah, I didn't do what I promised, they may lose for
vote,
re-election.
Right. Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if the economy is destroyed because they held to their principles about Obamacare, then they'll go back and everyone will be, the economy is terrible, we're not
right
voting you in. So ultimately, I guess what has to happen is the Republicans have to be persuaded that the consequences of continuing the government shutdown are worse in terms of not just for the country, but in terms of their re-election chances. On the flip side, the Democrats don't want to flip Obamacare, they would have the same problem. But
right,
again, it needs to be driven home to them that, you know, if they don't figure out some way to appease the Republicans, then the government will stay shut and their constituents will not be happy with that. So far, unfortunately, perhaps, both sides have been able to successfully frame to their constituents that it's the other side's fault. So they're not taking personal blame, right? They're not
right
getting hurt. But that may change as things get worse.
Okay.
But, you know, in the meantime, I think, you know, if you're a voter, it may be worth writing your congressman and telling them that you're unhappy, because that's what gets congressmen to respond. If a person who is unhappy enough to write is also a person who's unhappy enough to vote against you.
Right.
And for every person who's writing, there's 10 people who are unhappy. So if everybody who is unhappy with what's going on takes the time to write their congressman and tell them that, you might see some changes.
The latest on the shutdown is that both parties in the Senate have been working closer to an agreement to increase the borrowing power of the country that will provide enough money for the government to run till the end of the year. The poll that Sid had mentioned in the interview was a Gallup poll taken between October 3rd and 6th, showing a 28% approval rating for House Republicans, an all-time low. Today's Senate talks seem to be heading in the right direction, and maybe the end of the shutdown is near. All right, folks, you've been listening to Long Story Short, the Daily Bruins weekly news and culture talk show on UCLAradio.com. Don't forget to check us out and like us on the Daily Bruin Radio Facebook page or follow us on Twitter, at Daily Bruin Radio. The show is also available as a podcast on iTunes under Daily Bruin Radio.
A special thanks to our guests, David Shorter, Maurice Wheatley, Sam Goldberg, and Professor Danny Oppenheimer. Also thanks to our broadcast producer, Christiana Cabal, our radio director, Brianka Brosis, and our sound engineer, Hannah Jacobs.
You've been listening to Long Story Short, the Daily Bruins weekly news and culture talk show. That's the long and the short of it. I'm Meral Eric.
And I'm Sid Shah. Keep it classy, UCLA.